on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com. And for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. My name is Luke Guerrero, and today is Thursday, August 29th, 2024. I will be your host today for the next hour or so, and we'll be talking about change, because there are changes all around us. There are economic changes, political changes, which lead to economic challenges and political challenges. And so it's important that we don't lose focus on what matters. Your health, your family's health, your family's financial health, and taking small steps each day to reach your financial goals. Now, in order to accomplish and help us along this journey, to accomplish what we set out to accomplish, we come to InvestTalk and we provide you with educational items. We provide you with actionable items to help you along your journey. And we'll go over those things today. But more than anything, your contributions, your InvestTalk YouTube comment questions, your iTunes review questions, your 24/7 voicemails, or your live calls throughout the show are the most important part, because I need you to steer the conversation. Now, in a little bit, we'll talk about the market performance today and what a whipsaw of a day it was. We'll also run down those show topics that I have brought to the table. But first, let's tackle our first caller question now.
Hi, Duncan from New York. I just wanted to ask about a quick question on stock ticker ULTA, Ulta Beauty. I think Warren Buffett just bought it, and because he bought it, the market kind of went a little crazy with it too. But it looks like the PE ratio from Fidelity.com says it's at a 15. Return on equity is about 50%. Would this be a good buy opportunity? So looking forward to your answer, and thank you very much.
So Ulta Beauty is a company that we get questions about every now and then. I think we maybe got one a month or so ago. And, or at least I did. I'm sure Justin got them as well over the many months. But Ulta is a retailer of beauty and fragrance products, rather. It is a $17 billion market cap company. It's got very little debt. Its balance sheet is pretty clean. $1.9 billion in debt as of last year end, now sitting on just about the same, though paid down a little bit, $3 billion worth of debt. They do not pay a dividend. There's a little bit of short interest out there. And over the past 5 years, they've bought back over $10 million, or rather over 10 million shares. Now, their cash flow is improving. Their margins are expanding. Their gross margin was about 31% back in 2021, 40% last year. Their net margin grew from 2.9% in that time to 11.5%. And so you'd think to yourself, ooh, this company must be doing really well. Well, year to date, it's down 24.96, almost 25%. And so sometimes when companies are down, it's because there are idiosyncratic business risks within that company. Sometimes when companies are down, it's because the sector is down. You know, I think it's important to realize, and, Stanley Druckenmiller said it himself, that over 50% of a stock's return comes from the market return. Maybe another 30% comes from how the industry does. A very small portion of a stock's return comes from choosing which company is better than other companies. And so this is an example of that 20 to 30% of a stock's return. It is not doing well because the industry is not doing particularly well. And that's because, well, frankly, when people cut back, one of the things they cut back on first are beauty products. And so this company isn't doing poorly over the past year because it's put itself in a financial pickle. You know, it certainly has cash flow improving, profitability doing fine. It can pay its debts just fine. You know, it has $500 million in cash, which really minimizes its net debt to be almost, $1.25 billion. And so what I see this as, and what I saw this as a month ago, is an opportunity for long-term focused investors to pick it up. It's currently trading at 13 times forward-looking price earnings, at 13.8 times, 2.4 times on a PEG ratio, 1.5 times sales. So this looks pretty historically cheap for this company. In my opinion, it's below its five-year averages on both of those marks, and it's not because of anything wrong with the business. It's just because of the cyclicality of economic cycles. Cyclicality of cycles. Interesting, Luke. Anyway, my point being that if you have a long-term focus, I think now's a great time to pick up names like Ulta. Thanks for the call. Now, we've got a lot to touch on in the next 45 minutes or so. First of which is my main focus point today. Utility stocks surge. AI revolution transforms traditional market signals. Now, the recent rally in utility stocks is challenging what many have seen as a traditional market indicator. And that's because artificial intelligence and electrification trends drive unprecedented growth in electricity demand. This shift is transforming utilities from what they were historically, which is defensive plays, to the opposite, potential growth opportunities with companies like NextEra Energy, WEC Energy Group, positioned to benefit from the surge in power consumption by AI technologies and data centers. The changing dynamics within this sector may then to us signal a broader market evolution rather than flashing red economic flags, an economic warning. We'll also touch on the vast amount of macro data that came in today, including jobless numbers and revised Q2 GDP. We'll answer the question, an age-old question for many renters such as myself, and that's, are American rents rigged? And lastly, should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk about the problem with Chinese demand, and it is a problem for China, but it also seems to be a problem for the world as a whole. So we'll dig into that. Hopefully we get to it. It's a very interesting perspective, in my opinion. We also have some caller voice bank questions ready to play, including one on 401k advisors and one on IYH, which is the iShares US Healthcare ETF. We also have some questions ready that came into our Invest Talk YouTube channel comment section. And of course, we welcome your finance investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity and take your questions on the Invest Talk anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc., does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk now with 59 million downloads. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel.
Welcome back. Let's dive into the market today. U.S. stocks were probably the definition of mixed today, ending well off of their best levels. The S&P 500 finished flat, the Dow up 60 basis points, the NASDAQ down 23 basis points, small caps up 66 basis points. It was a good day for the equal weight S&P, which outperformed the official index. Outperformers across the market included internet names, software, China tech, specialty retail. Best Buy did particularly well. Underperformers included dollar stores, apparel retail, semis, housing-linked retail, media, trucking, and metals. Gold finished up 90 basis points. West Texas Intermediate crude settled up 1.8% on more headlines out of Libya. You know, overall, what appeared to be a positive day for most of the day, saw some pretty broad afternoon sell-off, though no real catalyst behind the move, and likely it was amplified by overall low volume throughout the day. NVIDIA was a sizable drag, with post-earnings weakness seemingly driven more by elevated expectations than what the results actually were, while other AI and CloudLink results mostly well-received, you know, reflecting on what appears to be some ongoing strength within IT investment and demand. Another corporate news, Salesforce up on a beat and full-year margin guidance bump. CrowdStrike results and guide seen as better than I think I would have expected, better than a lot of people feared given the dynamics of the recent outage. Best Buy beat and raise, see tailwinds from new Apple devices and the newly begun AI hardware cycle. Busy morning of data, which we'll dig into a little bit later on, including initial claims of 231,000, slightly below consensus, continuing claims up 13,000 week over week, though also a touch below consensus, holding at about 1.8 million level for the 12th straight week. Second read of Q2 GDP was also revised upward 20 basis points to 3%, upside driven primarily by revised consumption, which was up 60 basis points to 2.9% in the highest level since Q2 of last year. Q2 core PCE was also revised to 2.8%, which was below the consensus of 2.9%. July pending home sales index posted a surprise decline, falling to its lowest level since April of 2020. All eyes will now be on PCE tomorrow as we wrap up the month of August and head for the end of Q3 2024. Now, I hope you've gone and checked out our InvestTalk YouTube channel. We talk about it every day, and that's because when you go there, and you watch our videos and you leave questions in the comment section, we like to get to those as soon as we can. And so here's one that came in from Jim Leahy on FOUR 4. It says, what are your thoughts on 4? Short and sweet. So 4 is Shift 4 Payments, Inc. Shift 4 Payments, Inc. And it is exactly what it sounds like. It's a payment processing and technology company. And it provides secure payment solutions for businesses. They offer a lot of services. Looks like they do some payment processing solutions for businesses in hospitality, entertainment, retail, leisure industries. They sell POS systems. If anyone worked at a restaurant, such as I did when I was younger, you know exactly what POS systems are. They have some advanced security features to protect customer data, probably why their growth has been so good. They have business intelligence software, and they also have mobile payment software and hardware solutions. As I mentioned, their growth was pretty good for most of the past 5 years. Five-year annualized growth rate, 35.5%. Though it's tapering off in terms of the revenues. $2.5 billion is what they did last year. Only projected to do $1.3 billion this year. And that's growing all the way from $561 million 5 years ago. Now, in terms of debt, they have $1.788 billion as the most recent quarter end versus $5.348 billion market cap company. Their cash flow looks to be improving. Their profitability, it turned a profit for the first time in 2022. Their margins are expanding from 3.8% to projected to be 7.7% net margin this year. And it looks like a lot of what has driven this growth is an accretive acquisition strategy. They had 4 acquisitions most recently, one in June for $250 million. And so as of right now, they're primarily serving hotels, restaurants, casinos, but trying to expand into sports stadiums, airlines, and more international markets. Now, with that being said, I think one of the best parts of their growth strategy that I'm looking at right here is expanding into Europe through international acquisitions. They're trading right now at a price to book of about 7.3, price to sales of 1.8. Price cash flow 13.8. So they're below their 5-year averages, close to the lower end of that range. That being said, they're up 10% this week, so they're lagging the market by about 6.5%. And so even though you see tapering off sales numbers here, what you do see is better gross margins, improving efficiency, and better overall margins as well. They have, you know, a good amount of debt compared to their equity, but it looks like their interest coverage ratio is almost 4 times, so they're not overly levered. One thing that is worrisome to me is since 2021, they have issued 20 million shares, so that was nearly a 50% increase in shares. Maybe they're not funding their company through debt, but through equity offerings. Now, the market is pricing them as maybe possibly belonging lower than where they are right now. How do I know that? Well, 16% short interest, so You know, looking at this, I think that acquisition strategy looks good. Their growth strategy looks good as well. Their margins look to be improving and their cash flow is improving. You know, they're not crazy expensive, but overall, what I don't like is the slowing revenue number. And until people start spending more money on where their primary businesses are, casinos, hotels, they might not be able to expand as much. So for now, I'd put this on the back burner, though we do love names that are involved in cybersecurity and client data protection. Now we're moving into break, and still to come, I will tackle more of your voice bank questions, and we'll talk about utilities. Stay with me, or give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point today is about utility stocks and how the dynamics of the utility sector have been changing. Now, utility stocks are booming, but don't be quick to assume this signals trouble for the broader economy. Traditionally, when utility stocks outpace the market, it's seen as a warning sign, an indication that investors are flocking to the reliable, slow-growth sector amid fears of an economic downturn. Utilities are often referred as recession-proof, or rather viewed as recession-proof, offering a safe haven of sorts when the economy starts to cool off. David Rosenberg, an economist, recently noted that utilities provide a margin of safety that most other sectors can't match when times get tough. So, with the utility sector up around 19% year-to-date, it's understandable why some investors might be concerned. But this time around, and I laugh when I think of saying this time around, it might be different. Might be different this time. The surge in utility stocks doesn't carry the same ominous implications. The driving force behind this rally isn't just economic caution, though that may be a part of it, but it's the unprecedented demand for electricity, fueled by secular trends like artificial intelligence, electric vehicles. These technologies are reshaping the landscape, creating a massive and growing demand for power. Now, the shift was evident. Recent second quarter earnings reports from several utilities companies, Brookfield CEO Bruce Latt, highlighted the electrification of industrial capacity, automobiles, and heating as key drivers of this unprecedented growth in electricity demand. American Electric Power's interim CEO, Benjamin Folk, noted commitments for over 15 gigawatts of additional load by the end of the decade, a 43% increase, 43% from its current capacity. Duke Energy CFO echoed the same thing, forecasting unprecedented growth in power demand for not just data centers, but advanced manufacturing. And so what we're seeing is a transformation. It's a transformation of the utility sector. For decades, utilities were considered steady, reliable corner of the market, growing at a pace similar to what GDP grows. But now with the surge in demand driven by these new technologies, the sector is experiencing a breakout that signals broader market participation rather than alarm bells. Now, utilities, if they were the only sector seeing gain, then it might indicate something was off. But that's not the case. Other sectors, financials, industrials, consumer staples, tech, are also posting very solid gains. That indicates that market breadth is improving. So the next time you hear about the surge, didn't mean the pun, because we're talking about electricity, but next time you hear about the surge in utility stocks, remember, it isn't just about economic caution. It's about what's changing. It's about the massive shift in energy demand. Driven by retail customers, yes, electric vehicles, yes. Plug-in hybrids, yes. Driven by technological advancements, yes. Driven by data and artificial intelligence. All of this is transforming the utility sector away from being a safe haven and more towards a growth story in its own right. Let's see if I can fit one more caller question in before we head to our next break.
Hi, Luke, Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about Okta Incorporated, ticker symbol OKTA from the internet information technology sector and just had its earnings, which it beat, and also guidance was upbeat as well. But the stock in after hours dropped about 10-11% right now. It's been on my radar. Wanted to get your thoughts to see if it would be a good time to pick it up, if it's overvalued, undervalued. Thanks so much.
So taking a look at Okta, Okta is a cloud security company. It helps users log into dual authentication, dual two-factor authentication, mobile sign-on for various products, both mobile products and desktop products as well. Now, it's a $17 billion, $16 billion market cap company. It's got about $1.2 billion in debt, and it doesn't make money. It didn't make money in 2019, didn't make money all the way up until 2023. Now, it's projected to finally be positive this year, for what appears to be the first time, at least in the past 5 years. But even with that, sales have kind of tapered off. From $400 million, they grew to $2.2 billion up until last year. Now they're only supposed to grow to $2.5 billion in terms of revenue. They've issued a lot of shares. There's a little bit of short interest out there, but not too much. But I think there's two things here. One, generally, we don't like companies that don't make money, though this is a company that is turning the corner and finally about to make money. It was really strong before the pandemic, but then the S&P 500, the overall index, large cap index, really caught up to it in a way. But I think that one of the issues for me is, yes, the cybersecurity landscape is complex, but specifically with two-factor authentication and subscription and client identification, a lot of this has been internalized at companies like Google and Microsoft to the point that larger tech companies that build the platforms on which Okta would operate, it seems to me like down the road would usurp any power they have. And maybe that's where the revenue growth has gone. But, you know, looking at it, it's pretty overvalued, in my opinion. It's still trading at 24 times cash flow. And it just looks like growth has dried up. Congratulations to them for finally making the company profitable, should projections hold. But they got to get back on a growth front. And I just don't know how they can do that right now. On the next Invest Talk, Yuan carry trade, a rising Forex strategy amid yen weakness. The Yuan carry trade is emerging as a viable strategy for investors, particularly as the yen carry trade faces challenges due to Japan's monetary policy. That's tomorrow, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Hey, it's Sean Nelson, founder and CEO of LoveSack and host of the Let Me Save You 25 Years podcast. Curious how successful people really made it? Tune in to hear from guests like Travis Mills, a true American hero, and Nate Checkitz, co-founder of Roan. We dive deep into their stories and lessons that shape them so you can skip the trial and error and get straight to the good stuff. You can find me wherever you get your podcasts. That's Let Me Save You 25 Years with Sean Nelson. Listen now.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Frank in San Rafael. It was a question about ALAR. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
I own it. I've had it for quite a while, and I'm down 32%.
Well, that is unfortunate. Let me offer you my condolences first and foremost. We actually talked about this name, I think, yesterday. And when we looked at it, we thought, you know, yes, it has a good theme in that it is reaching towards people's desire to be safe in a time where cybersecurity issues are up front. And also personal property security issues are up front. But what you see in this company that averaged 16% growth over the past 5 years is over the past 3 years, the growth has kind of disappeared. Not only that, margins have improved a little bit, but become a little bit stable. But still, even with the growth falling off, it's trading at 27 times forward-looking earnings. Now, with that being said, that's not anywhere near the high of where it's traded. I wouldn't say it's overvalued. I'd say it's probably fairly valued based upon its trading ranges. You know, it's trading at 3.7 times sales. But for me, this is a growth issue. And talked about it yesterday. The growth seemed to have dried up in the past couple of years. So something has to change in order to grow revenues and to expand margins once again before you see a sustained upward movement, I would say. You know, it's down or it's up 2% today, still down 7% year to date. Obviously, you're down over 30%. But either way, I wouldn't buy more. I don't think it's a definite sell at this point. It could definitely trend higher, but it needs a catalyst, and it doesn't seem to have one right now. Thanks for the call. To make it two in a row, you know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Justin and Luke. Longtime listener here from the Midwest. I have a question for you gentlemen, please. I'm trying to add some healthcare to my portfolio. I thought I had a great fund to add, but then I came across the fund IYH, and I was wondering what you guys thought of that fund. It looks to have good holdings and everything. The other one I was considering was VHT, and that one, I believe, has pretty well spread out and looks pretty good. But IYH caught my attention. I didn't know if the holdings and distributions would be a little bit better on how it's balanced than VHT or not. What do you guys feel about that one? I would love to know your thoughts and considerations of that fund, please. I look forward to hearing from you on the show. Thank you. Have a great day.
So IYH tracks a cap-weighted index of pharmaceutical companies, biotech, healthcare services, and equipment companies. It is the iShares U.S. Healthcare ETF. So it tracks primarily large and mid-cap names within the healthcare space, about 94% large caps, about 5% mid-caps, tiny little bit of small caps, and maybe a little exposure to a microcap name, about 1 basis point exposure. Most of its revenue comes from the United States, 65% of its revenue, 69% from the Americas region. And so the index caps its individual securities at 22.5%. I doubt that anything gets anywhere near that. Eli Lilly being the largest holding at about 13%. It's got 108 holdings. Top 10 make up about 56%. The rest make up 43.9%. And it does all this, I don't know if I mentioned this before, for 40 basis points. So let's look at the other fund, which is VHT. VHT is the Vanguard U.S. Healthcare ETF. Broad exposure includes healthcare providers, service companies, healthcare equipment companies, supplies manufacturing companies. And it just does the same thing. It does a market cap weighted, total market cap weighted fund. Now, compared to the last fund we looked at, it has less large cap exposure, only 86%, which gives it more mid and small cap exposure, 7.86% and 2.92% respectively. It has far more holdings, 418. Eli Lilly is only 10.3%. United Health Group, 6.4%. Similar amount of revenue coming from the Americas, similar amount of revenue coming from the United States. And it does it for 10 basis points. Two reasons why I'd pick this fund. And that would be the Vanguard Healthcare ETF over the iShares ETF. One, 30 basis points cheaper. 30 basis points cheaper with very similar exposure. But it reaches a little bit more. How much more? This has 9% in small and mid caps. The other one has about 4% more total in small and mid caps. So you're getting more exposure to the lower ends of the market cap spectrum, which tend to historically outperform large caps over longer periods of time. Not only that, it has less exposure to Eli Lilly, 3% less exposure to that top name. I think if you're looking for something broadly diversified, but also something that gives you pretty similar exposure to the industry for cheaper, VHT, Vanguard Healthcare ETF. Now, this week in the labor market showed some stability, but with mixed signals that suggest a more complex economic landscape. A lot of data today, and the latest of it revealed that initial jobless claims fell slightly by 2,000 to 231,000 for the week ending August 24th. This drop was modest, yet it's a sign that the labor market is slowing down, not dramatically, but in an orderly fashion, I would say. Despite this, there's still noticeable challenges for laid off workers in finding new employment opportunities, indicating that the unemployment rate likely stayed elevated through the entire month. Now, while the labor market is cooling, it hasn't derailed the broader economic expansion. How do we know this? Well, second quarter GDP growth was revised up to an annual rate of 3%, driven primarily by robust consumer spending. This upward revision from the previously reported 2.8% signals that the economy has been more resilient than initially thought. Adding to this, corporate profits rebounded, further dispelling concerns about a recession looming immediately on the horizon. Now, these developments have further set the stage for the inevitable rate cut next month. Market expectations are now leading more and more towards 25 basis points in reductions, though I think a lot of the decision will be made next week with the latest labor data, unemployment data. The Fed has maintained its current rate for over a year, but with the labor market softening and inflation subsiding, the conditions are ripe for change. Now, on the other hand, the number of Americans continuing to receive unemployment benefits increased by 13,000 to 1.868 million. This rise suggests that some workers are experiencing longer periods of unemployment, which could weigh on the overall job market outlook and down the road harm GDP growth, expansion, consumer spending. Meanwhile, goods and trade deficit widened in July, driven by a significant surge in imports. The increase in imports is likely a strategic move by importers, possibly anticipating higher tariffs in the future. While the trade deficit typically drags on GDP because of how GDP is calculated, rising inventories from those imports could offset the impact for Q3 when all is said and done. Overall, the economic data presents a far more resilient economy than anyone anticipated, albeit one that's navigating through a slowdown in the labor market and an uncertain trade environment, which is to be expected in an election year. So, I said it yesterday, probably said it the day before, I'll be looking ahead to labor data next week, obviously PCE tomorrow as well, because I think that's really going to set the tone for the beginning of the cutting cycle. Now, here's another question that came into our InvestTalk YouTube channel. This one on BNS. It says, is now a good time to enter regional banks? What are your thoughts on BNS? Well, BNS is the Bank of Nova Scotia. It's a Canadian bank. And the Bank of Nova Scotia is a $81 billion, I believe that's Canadian dollar, which makes it $60 billion U.S. dollar, put in U.S. terms, market cap company. Quite a bit of debt, $164 billion in debt, but it is a bank. Its cash flow has been moderated over the past couple of years, even before going into the pandemic. It had fallen off a little bit. Let's look at their net interest income. Their net interest income growth is about 2.5%. Net income has fallen from the past 5 years. Their PE ratio, they're trading at 9.5 times book value, about 1.1, which is essentially where you expect banks to trade. Dividend yield, this is probably why you're looking for it. Dividend yield is 6.4%. 6.4%, which is 2 percentage points higher than it was 5 years ago, which isn't always a good sign. And so the broader question was, is now a good time to invest in regional banks? Well, the big problem with regional banks, right, was duration mismatching and that they reached longer on the yield curve at a time when that was the only way to get yield. And then rates went up. A lot of their assets that they had were on book losses. Some of them had to realize them. A couple of banks got wiped out. That's all she wrote. Now, with the rate cutting cycle beginning, the risk of being longer duration for those earlier securities is going to be less and less affected. Should they have to divest from things on their balance sheet that doesn't get marked to market until you sell, they would take less losses, but also those losses are just less accumulated now that rates are moving downward again. So regional banks aren't as dangerous as they were, you know, a year and a half ago. But the net income growth on this guy is not great, even stretching before the pandemic. It looks to me like it's a little expensive relative to where it itself has been trading. Got a consensus hold rating right now, and the spike in the dividend yield over the past year is a little worrisome to me. They've also issued a lot of shares in the past couple of years. I'm not as opposed to regional banks as I was in the recent past, more medium-term past, but I don't think this is the one. I know you're probably looking for some yield, some dividend yield. That's why you brought this one up, but I would look elsewhere. Thanks for the comment. That was Invest Talk. So let's play another caller question. It came in earlier from San Francisco.
Hi, this is Nick from Bay Area. I work for PG&E, and my 401k offers me a advisor through Edelman Financial Services to manage my 401k. Do you guys believe that this service is worth the extra money, or would it be better just to do it myself? And also, secondary question, my 401k is through Fidelity, and they now offer what's called a brokerage link, and I can actually buy, it appears to be mutual funds, but I tried buying ETFs, but it won't let me look it up, but it looks like I can purchase mutual funds through my 401k that are not part of the plan provided by Fidelity, so outside of Fidelity. Have you guys had any experience with this or any recommendations about whether it's a good idea or not? Thanks. Bye.
So I'll take on the second part of your question first, and that is that brokerage link. So Fidelity does that because it gives... All right, take a step back. Typically, 401k plans have limited options. And the reason why it has limited options is because employers in the United States are legally required, if they have this plan, to provide you with options. And if they're bad options, well, they can be subject to lawsuits. Now, that has led to limited fund options for 401ks. And so what Fidelity's brokerage link does is it allows you to reach beyond what your plan options are and provide you with access to mutual funds, like you said. And that can be good. That can certainly be a good thing if you are managing your own money. You have more options. I've seen 401k plans that frankly don't have great options at all whatsoever. And so yes, that can be a good way to reach beyond what your plan is offering. So now taking the first part of your question second, the first part was, is it worth it to pay for this advisor? Well, I don't have a clear answer for you. I know that we manage client 401ks. We have a system that connects directly to their 401k plan, and we can rebalance and manage our clients' money that way. But we are a fiduciary. We have a incentive structure, a fee structure that aligns our incentives with our clients' incentives, right? We talk about this all the time. Fee-only advisors. Not people that are incentivized to sell you products, but people that are incentivized to grow your assets. And so I don't know what the fee structure is of your specific plan. I don't know how much you're paying. Maybe they're charging you 2%. That would be outrageous. So that's a consideration. But also you need to know, how are those fees allocated? Are they getting anything from selling you products? If they're getting anything from selling you products, it is an automatic no. That is the number one way to not align incentives of financial advisors with clients. They will put things in your account that get them commissions. Are they fiduciaries? Do they have a responsibility, a legal responsibility, to act in your best interest? That's another question. And then again, I'll reiterate the first one because it can be the most important one. What is the fee structure? How much are they charging? They're charging anywhere north of, 1.5, 1.6%, probably lower a year, maybe even 1%. We charge 1% for our 401ks that we manage. Anything more of that, well, that's, what are you paying them that much for? And so those are all things to consider. I don't know your specific plan, but maybe do some investigation. Get back to me. This is Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here, and that is to help you achieve financial freedom. Our work continues after this break, our final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here.
and ready to tackle your questions.
I would like to know more about a company which I've been tracking for some time.
Quick question on a very risky play. It is a company that caught my attention because the ROE is like close to 100%.
InvestTalk is ready 24/7.
And I was just wondering, are there any investment accounts with different banks that you would recommend? Something that may offer good resources?
Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before we head off for the day, I'm going to skip the story I wanted to talk about renting. We can talk about that tomorrow. And instead, let's talk about China and specifically how the Chinese economy stands out in an unusual way. Now, unlike other major economies where consumer spending contributes, 50 to 75% of GDP, in China, it's only 40. Instead, investment in property, infrastructure, and exports make up most of the rest. But this reliance on investment is kind of becoming a problem, not just for China, but for us, for the rest of the world. With China's property investment collapsing, the country's low consumption is now a significant headwind to growth. When Chinese companies can't sell to domestic consumers, they export. It's led to a trade surplus of nearly $900 billion annually. That's about 80 basis points of global GDP. So what this surplus does is it effectively forces other countries to run trade deficits. It's not just the U.S. that's feeling the strain. China's balance of trade with the EU, with Japan, other Asian economies, it's all increased significantly. China's growth model has become confrontational. It relies heavily on investment while undercutting other countries' manufacturing sectors. For instance, while China accounts for only 13% of global consumption, you know how much of investment it makes up? 28%. Historically, many developing countries used investment and exports to fuel early growth, but China is different because of its sheer size and how low its consumption remains. If China's consumption matched that of the EU or Japan, its annual household spending would be $9 trillion. Right now, it's at $6.7 trillion. That is a massive gap. In fact, it's a gap equivalent to Italy's entire GDP. And so this shortfall creates a 2% hole in global demand. And that strains the world economy. The roots of China's underconsumption lies in its fiscal systems and policy choices. Income inequality, huge issue. Top 10% of households hold nearly 70% of total savings, while a third have negative savings rates. Unlike other countries that address such disparities through progressive taxation, social spending, China does less. Just 8% of its tax revenue comes from personal income tax, with the bulk from value-added tax, which disproportionately, it's regressive, it burdens lower-income families. Adding to this, China spends less on health and education compared to other major economies. Surprising. It forces families to spend more of their disposable income on these essentials. Meanwhile, suppressed wages, low interest rates boost profits for state-owned enterprises and depress household incomes and spending. A decade ago, Chinese policymakers recognized the need to shift from investment to consumption. But under Xi Jinping, the country has moved in the opposite direction. Xi focuses on independence and self-reliance, which has led China to produce more domestically and import less, rejecting the traditional principles of comparative advantage that underlie global trade. Some countries may not be better at producing what you produce, but on a comparative basis, it makes sense for you to produce something else because on a relative basis, they are better. That is the comparative advantage that drives global trade. And so their approach has, more than anything, strained relations with other countries who now see China as more of a competitor than a customer. Countries like Mexico, Chile, Indonesia. They're considering tariffs on Chinese goods to protect their own industries. We put tariffs on some electric vehicle manufacturing parts to protect from China dumping those products on the U.S. and damaging U.S. industries. Even Canada's recently announced steep tariffs on Chinese electric vehicles, steel, aluminum, aligning with those moves that we made. Yeah, despite the mounting tensions, China refuses to acknowledge its underconsumption as a problem. Xi views fiscal support for households as welfareism that breeds laziness, a stance that only deepens the divide. And as a result, the world's already fragile trading system, which we saw how fragile it was with drying up of supply chains in the past couple years, the world's already fragile trading system faces growing stress, potentially more trade wars, more frictions likely on the horizon. Now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another InvestTalk program. Justin and I thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members, or maybe just people you walk by on the street, about our free podcast downloads, which they can get at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, and come check us out on YouTube. Our channel's name is InvestTalk. How creative, InvestTalk with two T's. I think you'll like it. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.